such your input. Want to call the, hi, how are you? I just want to make sure you know that Bob. Yes. Okay. Yes, I have that. Want to call the Customer Service and Operations Committee to order. Do we have everyone's attention? And we will keep moving. Thank you very much. Before you, you have the agenda. Are there any questions and comments regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, I'll accept the agenda as published. And next, I'd ask for approval of the minutes. Moved by Ms. Hines and seconded by Ms. Porter. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor? And those opposed. The minutes are approved. Good morning to everyone. We are here for one action item on today's agenda, as well as one informational item. The first item on our agenda will be to approve a public hearing to accept the Tacoma Langley Crossroads Transit Center into the Metro Adopted Regional System. This transit center, which is currently under construction by the state of Maryland, will improve service and safety for our customers at one of the region's busiest bus hubs. Next, the committee will take up the Chief Performance Officer, Andrea Burnside, who a discussion on Metro's performance in the first quarter of 2015, along with the ways that Metro staff has been working to improve performance in the areas in which they are falling below on some of their goals. And before we begin those two items on the agenda, I'd like to turn the floor over to Mr. Ambry and have him walk us through these items first ask the deputy, I'm sorry, before he starts, to ask the deputy county general manager of operations, Mr. Troop, to give us a brief discussion on Monday morning's arching incident and lessons learned from that experience.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about the incident. And first, I would like to take a moment to apologize to our customers for the poor service delivery on Monday morning and also that same evening. Now, our customers expect and deserve more reliable service, and disruptions like these experienced certainly cannot be tolerated. We at WMATA must do better if we are to continue to serve the region as the driver for economic growth and sustainable living. We have a responsibility as we take our passengers into our care to get them there to their jobs, their homes, and their entertainment in a manner that is first and foremost safe, but also reliable and consistent. But I further get it that my words do little unless they are followed up by actions which make the system better. And what I am certain is that we have a workforce that is dedicated to that cause and that we will be better in the future. As a point of information review, in the morning we experienced arcing insulator issues that reported on both the inbound and outbound tracks between Roslyn and Foggy Bottom. Because the smoke was reported as heavy, the Rail Control Center made the prudent decision to suspend service until further investigation could be made. While we recognize a significant disruption and inconvenience to our passengers any time we suspend service, we do this to ensure their safety and well-being. A bus bridge was ordered, and we set up a train shuttle to run between Roslyn and Pentagon to allow transfers at LaFont back to the orange and blue lines. Crews were dispatched immediately, but access to the incident area on the outbound side, which was mid-river, was difficult, and personnel had to walk into the location. It's approximately 1 mile to that location. Also, because of the rush hour time frame, getting to the location took some time, even with a police escort. After assessing the scene, it was determined that we had 5 arcing insulators on the outbound track in the tunnel, and it was later discovered we had also had 3 on the inbound track, which were compromised. What is most important to us after a day like Monday is, you know, how do we improve our response? Let's say by improve first is prevention. You know, we don't want to have to put into practice contingency plans and bus bridges and communications protocols. We want to avoid the incident altogether. So with all the recent production work, with the excellent progress in renewing ties and rails and other track structures, we can renew our focus on items such as tunnel washdowns, which have not been done since the early 1990s, and also insulator cleaning. I wanted to give the board an opportunity to see, this is actually one of the insulators that came out of the Roslyn incident. You can understand what the structure of it is. This is a porcelain insulator. This would have been one of the original insulators that was put into the system. The third rail lies on top of this insulator, and again, it acts as an insulating between the electrical side and the ground side on it. The dirt and grime that you see here is collected over many, many years. comes from the various items, the brake dust from the steel corrode as the shoe goes over the third rail, the normal abrasion on that, and water intrusion that we have in some of our earlier bored tunnels. So you can see it's important because what happens is, you know, we have a conductive material here, and very often on humid days or where we have large water intrusions, you end up with the water around this and in addition to the conductive material there, and it creates an arcing to ground on this. So so you can kind of have an idea of, you know, what we deal with on a daily basis. We have we are in a process of replacing insulators. Like I said, we have renewed focus in cleaning them. The Roslyn Tunnel insulators were scheduled for June of this year to be able to be cleaned. But because of the incident, I reallocated crews, and we have completed the entire tunnel section since the incident. In addition, we are actively working on the red line from the core outward. So I've reprioritized the washing of the insulators. And again, a lot of this is because of the production work that we have done previous. You know, if you have bad ties, bad rail, bad fasteners, you can't really address insulators. So being able to do that work has allowed us to come in and reprioritize those work efforts that we can begin cleaning these. We do expect to initiate tunnel washdowns in late June or early July. This work will continue with the entire system getting washed at least once every 2 years. In addition to this immediate work, I have our engineers walking track to determine if there are any major areas of concern to address immediately. In addition, we have an independent study being progressed which will evaluate our entire negative return infrastructure. And this should be completed by the end of October. And this is very, very critical. As I said before, the railroad is a system. The tracks, the track bed, the ties, the fasteners, the insulators, the third rail are connected in some way. The track circuits, the traction return, the bonds that allow the track circuit current to go through them, all of this is integrated. So it's important that we take a very, very comprehensive look to make sure that we are addressing all the issues that are out there. Again, we are doing things like increasing the ampacity through the cable side. We're increasing the ampacity through the high current bonds associated with the track circuits, and we are continuing to replace third rail to a less resistive third rail from steel to aluminum composite. So you know, we are taking those immediate steps for appropriate cleanup and reduction of power through the core, and critical areas will be addressed, and our production effort is allowing us to continue to target those specific areas, and particularly those critical areas, such as the Roslyn Tunnel, D&G, LaFont, Pentagon, to be able to address those areas that we know are very, very critical. I would like to contrast this event to the one on Tuesday evening where we suspended service between East Falls and Tysons due to a suspicious item found wayside. I would like to thank ATC technician Gary Heilton for being observant and putting into practice see something, say something. Again, the ROCC made the prudent decision to suspend service, and we actually established a bus bridge from West Charlotte Falls Church to Tysons because of the ability to be able to run better bus service. Passengers did have to wait approximately 30 minutes while buses were sent to West Falls, and we also like to thank Fairfax Connector for making a bus available for that. Coordination with other service providers certainly can be key to address instances like this one. The Transit Explosive Ordnance Disposal Unit was deployed and cleared the object, and I have it here. This was the object. It is as evidence now. But what we have made a determination through investigation, it appears as this is associated with a weather balloon device. Okay, this goes up with the weather balloon and tracks information on that. But again, you know, I would like to thank the ATC technician for recognizing this as a suspicious package, excuse me, and making the appropriate calls on that. And again, our ROCC being very prudent in that. And I would also like to thank the Transit Police for their timely intervention in getting there very, very quickly. So that's sort of an outline very quickly of events. And I would like to ask Lynn Bowersox to discuss the communications during the specific event in the morning.
I'd like to let us do both because I think there will be both questions in both directions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as you see on the slides behind me, the incident on Monday morning started just about 8 o'clock, with the first report of smoke in the tunnel between Roslyn and Foggy Bottom. And as Rob pointed out, that's one of the most remote locations. It is under the river, quite a distance. The fire departments were notified, and Arlington and D.C. both responded, and rail service was suspended just after 8 a.m. During this incident, we had dozens of text and email alerts and tweets out to the public from 8:15 until the end of the incident, when full service was restored just before 4 p.m. The system-wide PA announcements were both in the stations and then again on board trains. The kiosk screens before one enters the fare paid area were turned red with breaking news messages. The breaking news bar was active on WMATA.com, which is also visible on the mobile site. And the operators on board, of course, were making announcements. And we had, during this time, 78 interactions on Twitter, which were a combination of us pushing out messages regarding service as well as intercepting and answering customers who had questions along the way. And then, of course, we did issue a formal apology just after 1 o'clock to our customers for the inconvenience. Yesterday, we sent to 10,000 Smart Trip customers who are registered for Orange, Blue, and Silver Line emails asking them to participate in a survey about the incident and their experience on Monday morning. And as of 7 o'clock this morning, we have 2,000 completed surveys. And so while we will continue to collect the feedback from our customers, I think we have a good first glimpse of what their experience was, which I'll share. In terms of the way they learned about the incident, 32% of those who learned about the disruption before leaving home had information through our channels, but that was a very small portion of the commuters, most of whom were out on their way or into the system by 8 a.m. by the time this happened. The majority who did know before reported that they learned about the disruption either from the media or through word of mouth. So again, two-thirds of them, of our customers, two-thirds fully, were already on a platform or on board a train, as they reported when they first learned about the disruption. And this is consistent with findings that we've had on other surveys where most people tell us that they get their information first about Metro on Metro. So customers who were aware of the delay prior to entering the station in the fare paid areas said they took Metro anyway. They took the chance for one of two principal reasons. It's the only option for many people, or they actually didn't think the delay would last quite as long as it did. So you may recall that when an incident starts, it starts with what we know. It starts with a report of smoke in a tunnel and one insulator. But as it develops, of course, the severity becomes known. And during that time, rail operations personnel and police personnel are assessing the severity of the issue, how long it will take to repair and restore service. And so those communications evolve. So the customer's first piece of information is not the same as the information they get 20 minutes later. And by then, they've made a decision. They've entered the system, they've boarded a train, and they're committed. Okay? And so their confusion or the complaints about lack of information are completely understandable, because that information on which they make decisions constantly changes and evolves. So 37% of the customers reported that they did see the information on the kiosk screens, and nearly half say they heard station announcements, but a much smaller number reported that they actually understood the announcements. And the same thing was the case on board trains, where, again, you know, 3 out of 4 said, I heard an announcement on my train, but only a third understood them. So what does that tell us? Well, I think it tells us a couple of things. In stations, when there are thousands of people in a cavernous environment, our PA systems aren't terribly effective at delivering information. It's just too loud, and there's too much echo, and there's too much distance between you and the speaker. And so it's not the best way to get evolving information. On board the train, it's a little better, but clearly we still have a ways to go in terms of providing customers with the information that they need in a way that they can hear and understand it. I think part of that's jargon. I think we're still working really hard to undo our jargon. You know, for us, seek alternate travel is a pretty clear message. We can't guarantee that you'll arrive where you want to go this morning. That's what that means in Metro world. But not all customers understand it the same way. And so we have to keep refining our ability to communicate the right words to people so that they really can take actions based on the information we provide. I'm happy to take any questions or defer back to Rob.
Excuse me. Let me. Can you turn your mic on so we can make sure? And let me know if you want to speak.
You talked about several items in your report thus far, problems. What plan of correction have you devised to address those issues?
What
you just simply stated, I'd like for the lady to answer. In terms of, she presented it.
Sure, Mr. Price. The railroad has underway a number of different areas of effort to address these matters. They have been doing training with operators to improve their messaging to customers, both in terms of enunciation as well as in terms of providing prescripted messages that make information more accessible to lay people and less jargon intensive. And we've seen in our customer satisfaction research a trend line of improvement there, but clearly we still have a way to go. With respect to the in-station announcements, as Rob can speak to, part of the capital program has been the rehabilitation replacement of certain PA systems as they go forward in the Red Line program, the Orange Blue Line program. Some of the older systems are being replaced. That will get us further along. But I do want to emphasize that in an extreme disruption, such as the one we had Monday morning, I'm not sure that PA systems are going to be the entire solution. And what we've talked about is having a much more robust program of response at the station locations where the disruption is the most severe, where we have more personnel available with bullhorns, with information. We've given every station manager now a radio, and one of the things that the rail department is looking at is with some improvements that they're making at the Rail Operations Control Center, dedicating people to being the ones to deliver information to the station managers on those radios so that when they're out of the kiosk and they're trying to relay information to 1,000 customers, that they're being given real-time information to update customers. We've deployed the radios. We don't have the back-end infrastructure in place yet to provide the right real-time information to the station managers, and so they're still struggling.
Actually, I've been in the station when it has not been crowded, and you still can't hear what's going on. In terms of when they make announcements. So what is the solution for this? So it's more than just a crowd out there. When you have, you know, a few people in the station, you still can't understand what's the announcements, period.
So through the capital program, we have initiated some PA improvements on some of the stations, and all the stations have been addressed. The capital program does address some of that, but not all of that moving forward.
Ms. Porter, Ms. Trigoni, and Ms. Downey.
I have a couple of questions, one for Ms. Bowersox and one for Mr. Troop. The anecdotal information that I heard was primarily people saying, as you said, that they weren't getting complete information. And I understand during an incident like this, the information that we have available evolves. I mean, first it's a smoke in the tunnel. That doesn't say you're going to have a three-hour delay in your commute, because all we know is what we know, and then as we learn more, we gradually can put out more information. But it seems to me that there's an issue about how we prioritize information to customers as opposed to information within the system. And obviously safety has to come first. And it means the safety of our passengers, the safety of our workers. But after that, how do we put a very high priority on getting information outside the system, or do we primarily send it around inside the system before it starts going out in the networks?
So it's both. It's all simultaneous. Everything that we're doing from a communications, from an incident communications management perspective is going out on all channels simultaneously. So while we're telling station managers to make announcements, while we're telling operators to make announcements, that's also going on Twitter. It's turning the kiosks red. It's going on to the WMATA.com. So it's not a matter of choosing first, second, and third. It all happens at the same time, with the same messaging. It's pretty centralized at this point.
Okay. And then the question for Mr. Troop is, I understand what you're saying about we can't just replace the insulators without replacing the other things. But keeping that in mind, do we have a time frame when all of our insulators will be new? You said that some of the problem, I understand not all of it, but some of the problem is the age of some of the insulators that we still have. Do we have a time frame when we would have all new insulators in the system?
We do have the program replacement for the insulators. Again, and this is, you know, if I can draw back to the metaphor of painting the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, once we get to the end, you know, we have, you know, many hundreds of thousands of insulators through the system. Once we get to the end, we turn back and start over, you know, right away and do them again. So I can give you an idea of when we anticipate the bulk of them to be done. But what I don't want to dismiss is the idea that cleaning the insulators is also very, very important. You know, replacing the insulators under a capital program, you know, yes, that needs to be done. But cleaning the insulators, and what we have now is the opportunity to do that because we have created a track structure which is reliable. So, again, when I talk about time and space, you know, we have the limited amount of time and space. That's as much as a constraint of resource as the finances are, the ability to get out there and do the work. Now we have completed that, I can reallocate crews to be able to go in there. Like I said, we had intended to do this in June. What we also are doing is we're taking heat rides. Every quarter, we put infrared cameras onto the trains. They go through, they look at hot spots to try to make determinations, you know, through the infrared, you know, do we have hot spots so that we can identify those locations, trend those locations, and get in and do this. So it's very, very important. The tunnel washdowns and washing the insulators are very important. Doing that regular maintenance and getting there and doing that is very critical to this, because you can have a new insulator. You can have a new insulator that is only 6 months old. If it's not properly washed and taken care of, then you have these types of incidents.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I have to go back to Mr. Bolger. He's not interrupted us before the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, how old is that insulator that you brought us?
This insulator is probably 20, 25 years old. I will say that it probably has been cleaned. I'm not sure. They didn't keep records when they used to clean them. We do now to keep a database, like I said, of those areas.
So how do you clean them? Where does the residual go? Into the river?
For these, we just go ahead and power wash these out around the cleaning.
So where does the liquid go?
What's that? Well, that's just that then is just, you know, a small amount of water that's in there. So the tunnel washdowns are the issues that we're looking at there. You might want to talk to Carla Grano, is our environmental specialist, and she can probably give a better idea of how we are addressing the environmental concerns that we may have.
Well, so I was make sure we're not breaking the Clean Water Act here.
No, we are not.
No,
we are not.
Okay. We don't break the Clean Water Act.
Okay, final question. All right, final question. It seems to me that it's time to think about pre-positioning response teams. You can come up with an acronym. In geographically, to get at these incidents faster. My example is we got a client in the San Francisco Bay Area. We pre-position tow trucks, okay, that go and get the incident off the freeways faster rather than waiting to call AAA. Is that something we can think about geographically, sub-regionally, and have the right people who are, you know, on call, an incident happens, they're activated quickly rather than have to muster, you know, a team?
We actually have two emergency response teams, which are pre-positioned. We have one downtown here, and we have one over on the Virginia side to be able to do that. The one downtown actually has it's a truck with lights and sirens, and we have a police officer who is assigned to be able to get those people to there, so we do. Obviously, it's a little bit of a resource constraint to be able to have those resources and be able to deploy them, but we are looking very, very closely at being able to have those strategic locations. Again, we have some of that. We have it downtown, and we have it over on the Virginia side.
core has a sump?
Yeah, the core, yeah. They actually are at right here at JGB, you know, where they can respond to the core, and that includes a supervisor, four trackmen, and like I said, the truck is equipped with lights and sirens to be able to get safely, but, you know, with alacrity to the scene.
Thank you. Ms. Tregon.
I know that we rely a lot on our peer transit agencies to problem solve and troubleshoot and review operations, and certainly the soot washing has got to be an issue in every single subway system, you know, in America. So it seems like we should be able to find out pretty quickly how other places are handling it, and if we need a temporary dispensation from a regulatory body because of a health and safety issue, I think that that might be something that we could do. We might have an interim solution that's a far step removed from what we might ultimately do, but that shouldn't be a reason that we can't be doing the washing that seems to be leading to these incidents. So that's just one comment. The other comment.
Can I respond to that
yeah.
very quickly? What I will say is that I agree with you. However, we have spoken with environmental, and we are certain that we can move forward with tunnel washdowns, you know, in a safe and environmental way. So we are certain that we can do that, and we will begin doing that.
Okay, that's great. The other thing is this. This is ubiquitous. This, everyone has a phone. They're not all smartphones, but they can at least receive text messages. And so I know that either myself or some other board member raises at every board meeting, what's the status of getting service, right, in the tunnels? And I started asking other people I know in the industry, because again, I'm sure it's not just us who are having this problem. So other systems have started, the people that they've contracted with who cannot fix this problem, the big telecommunications companies, are now subcontracting with little mesh network providers who are able to fix the problem. I think we need to lean on those contractors a lot harder and look for other solutions, because everybody has this. And my confidence in getting a PA system that would work in a crowded tunnel when people are panicky is much less than my confidence and the ability. I mean, I signed up for text messages. Boy, do I get a lot of text messages. And that's great. I want to know how that's working. You know, people can share that information to the people standing right next to them in a train car. I think this is the solution. We already do a pretty good job with this and could get better if we had the internet connections, if we had the connections inside the tunnels. So I would just beg you to redouble your efforts to get that to happen. And I could probably give you the names of other systems who have used mesh network solutions to try to get an answer to this, because, you know, it would solve a lot of things for us. Thanks.
Thank you. And there may be an opportunity that we come back and just key that issue, because the history and the high and the how and the why at another time, okay?
Rob, you talked about the work you intend to do reviewing the entire power and negative return system, and I would hope that's going to look at other causes that might be out there. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, washing is going to make a big improvement, but there may be other things happening. Ways we're operating, additional stress we're putting on by longer trains, way power is being distributed. I think we really have to take a basic look at how that system is working. Performance of new insulators versus old insulators. I think everything should be on the table. We shouldn't take the assumption that one thing we're going to do is going to fix the problem, or we could wind up being very embarrassed that we do something and we still have the problem.
No question, and that's part of the comprehensive outlook that we're looking at. In fact, the firm we currently are engaged with a firm right now for a piece of that, which, you know, includes on the negative return side to be able to look at that. And also they have simulations which can look at the simulation of the trains, you know, the power draws that they would do. In addition, not just the trains themselves, but the infrastructure that you have, being able to identify what size cable you have in your returns, what size your rail is, to be able to make determinations of where those heat registers would be. So again, that we can look at that. So there's absolutely no question that looking at a comprehensive standpoint of this is actually very critical, because again, washing is just a part of that.
And I think that will help us a lot as we move forward. I certainly would hope either here or the safety committee, once that study is done, that we'll get a public airing of what it's told us, and then what we would do to respond. Lynn, on the communication side, what capability do we have to look back in the timeline of an incident like this and say, what were we saying to people when? Because some of the reports I've gotten were literally conflicting information coming out at the very same moment. The platform is saying service is suspended, and someone could actually hear that. The operator is saying we'll be moving momentarily. Similarly, within some stations, I gather, we opened the gates and let people out without paying. Other stations, we didn't do that. I agree with you. Somebody has to be the quarterback of information going out to the customer and have the ability to assure both concurrently and after the fact that that's what has been happening, because I think we don't really have a clear message. Every medium, like Harriet has said, should be used, but it's critically important that it be timely and consistent. Inconsistent information just really, really drives people crazy.
Agreed. And
do we have a communications person in the control center on a regular basis?
So there's a couple answers to those questions, I guess. The Rail Operations Control Center has individuals who handle multiple functions, including metro alerts, which go out to customers, including fire department notification. I mean, so communication is very operational in nature.
And that will, the communication for the customer will always, for reasons we all understand, drop to the bottom. The multitasking person in the control center, I think we have to look at those jobs and break them down. One of the peer review comments was, you want something done, somebody has to be there to do that. By the way, that's what I did when I was a kid. First job in transit was I had to go to the control center two nights a week and be the conscience of information going out in a timely way. And once you remind the people in the center that has to happen, it happens. Otherwise, they're going to be preoccupied with the most important factor, which is safety and moving trains, and customers find out for themselves. I think we have to do a better job.
I agree.
Thank you. Ms. Hines, and then we'll try and move on to the agenda.
Two things that I want to just hone in a little bit on. Mr. Troop, you mentioned on the Tuesday incident that you were able to work successfully with the Fairfax bus system to help build that bus bridge. So my question really is about, in the hierarchy of all the things that have to be done, where is the alert to the local bus system? And are we drilling collectively around what happens, particularly when we're dealing with these crossing the river things, when they go out, this cascade just is so huge. So can you talk to that a little bit?
Yes, certainly. In the hierarchy, particularly when we establish a bus bridge, that's one of the first things that we look at. We look at the availability of buses that we have. We look at the availability of parallel bus routes, the already established bus routes, and we look at jurisdictional support on bus being able to provide buses. So you know, we set the conference call up. The bus OC does a very, very good job of establishing that hierarchy to say we have buses here, and they will reach out immediately to the local jurisdictions if there's a determination made that would be helpful.
So somebody in the bus operations center is actually making a decision about whether or not to contact the local bus service.
That's made. Those decisions are made. We have a rail service disruption call, and a lot of times those decisions are made collectively. You know, we initiate the call automatically, and so it's a consensus. There's an opinion to be able to say to get those. You know, we got parallel bus routes. Let's establish those. But bus OCC is ultimately responsible for, you know, being able to provide, put those forward and be able to provide that communication link between the two.
Let me just add, I think it's important that not only would we contact them in the need for assistance, but primarily is to inform them, first of all, that we're having difficulties and you're feeding people to the problem, and be aware of that and, you know, take alternative plans if they have that. And that's what we were doing on Monday morning.
Well, for whatever reason, I'm getting some information that that never got to our bus operation people in Arlington, which would have been an important thing to have happened. So I just, I guess I'm saying on behalf of others who may experience these things, please make sure that you reach out, because sometimes there are assets which can be deployed from the locality to help with the bus bridge or to do any number of things, as was evidenced from working with Fairfax. So during rush, it's always a little trickier, but I just think we can also be echoing those messages on our media as well as what you're doing. The second thing I wanted to just raise, and it's because we've been sitting here for the last 12 months, and we've had a number of incidents, whether we're talking about people who self-evacuated or, any number of things. How can we create some mechanism for people who are interested in being helpful in these situations to be better educated about what they should do to help other customers? We have a robust CERT program in Arlington. More than 500 people are trained. Some of them have had experience on the system. But I just really think we need to create something in here that's Metro training for interested parties, so that we have a higher likelihood not only of our folks being on the train, but of these folks who've been through some level of training and can be voices of reason and potentially providers of information in a reassuring manner.
Ms. Hines, I think you raised
it. And Montgomery actively does CERT training, too.
We do as well.
Okay.
And we have a good training program. And I think the volunteers are very earnest and genuine in their dedication to wanting to help. Where we don't do a great job is activating CERT volunteers during emergencies, because there's so much going on that identifying where those folks are, activating them, getting them deployed, is something that often goes by the wayside. So that is definitely an area of focus that we should attend to and figure out if those folks can sign up for their regular commutes, where they're going to be on different days at different times, so that we know there's an issue on the red line. Great, we have 10 CERT-trained people there that we can send pages to and hopefully engage. I think that we underutilize that resource.
That would be great. I would point out that one of the ways we've solved this in Arlington is that there is a volunteer CERT coordinator who is the point of contact. So it goes immediately from our office, from Jack Brown, who runs our OEM, to that person, and she then takes care of the rest of it. And so it's not then a burden on the professional staff, but she's part of the team and understands what she's supposed to do.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Yule, you will be the last question, and we will need to move on, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And, these incidents, again, they are becoming too numerous. And at my city council meeting the other night, I offered an apology, not only on behalf of WMATA, but as a 14-year board member here, to not only the residents and riders from Alexandria, but the entire region for the inconvenience. But the reality of this now is that it's a blemish. At least the incidents on Monday was a blemish for WMATA, and we got to find solutions. We got to stop these things from happening. And it really boils down for me, which irks me the most is the lack of communication. And every time that we have an incident, we sit here, we go through, we talk about what we're going to do, and personally, for me, I don't really see any changes, and and maybe it's people, maybe it's personnel versus whether it's equipment, technology, but that's I'll leave it at that. But I think really the message that I left with my people, citizens, the other evening, again, as we are trying to not only have restored the funds that Congress, unfortunately, through in the House has cut, from this $150 million to $50 million, whatever the heck they cut it down to, $150 to $100, and then trying to get those funds restored. We had a group of mayors, U.S. Conference of Mayors, yesterday lobbying in Washington on behalf of the transportation funding bill, which is important. And when people say, well, what's wrong with the system, metro system, I say, we just need a dedicated funding source. And so until we can really get to that point, I'm not that naive to understand that we're going to keep having incidents and challenges like these. But so that's a strong message, stronger message that just needs to be out there. And whatever we can do as a region and through COG and Board of Trade, as a matter of fact, I had a lunch meeting with the Board of Trade about 10 days ago with some other regional business leaders and elected officials. This was one of the topics of discussion. How can we collaboratively support WMATA in terms of dedicated funding? But when maybe we just need a whole new Congress, and and it's not just for WMATA, but it's to really get to this whole transportation funding issue. But this is going to continue, and that's probably beyond what we can control. But what we can control is improving our communication. Again, what really upset me was sitting at home, I just got home from a meeting, turned the TV on, 11 o'clock news, hear about an incident in the tunnel, in a station at Metro Center, and, it had obviously had happened minutes or longer before I even turned into the 11 o'clock news. I'm sitting here waiting to look on my iPhone or get some communication, nothing. And I said, this is like, as board members, I get every emergency call through my phone that happens in the city of Alexandria. I mean, even before the EMS or the fire trucks arrive on the scene, I know what's happening. And if I want to go there and be there, I can do it. And so if localities have the technology in place to communicate with their people that have to that are making policy decisions, one would like to think that we can do that here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yule. We understand all of the concerns we have, and we probably will need to come back to talk about this issue in a more detailed way. And we will offer, and I'm going to apologize, it's late. We have not introduced ourselves, and you may have your question. And then we will go on, and we'll talk about maybe when on the safety schedule we can come back.
Thank you very much. I'll try to be brief here. I was a little confused about the explanation regarding the washing. Was that an activity that was performed prior to Monday at all, anywhere on the system?
The insulator washing, yes.
It has been performed prior to Monday?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. But it hadn't been performed in that segment?
That's correct.
And so
Okay. It was scheduled for June.
Scheduled for June.
June, yes.
Okay. And so there's never been an issue with regard to kind of the environmental compliance associated with that washing, or has there been an issue?
With the washing for the insulators, there was not an issue with that. That's correct. There was not.
And we knew that before Monday?
We knew that before Monday, yes.
But let's expand the answer or the question such that the frequency of the washing is relative to what?
The frequency of the washing? It's relative to the area itself.
It's specific to the area itself. The time on the track as well as programming it into the
into the maintenance program.
Right.
Yeah. So
which is extremely narrow.
Right, and then the tunnel washing itself, the washing of the insulators had been done. The tunnel washing the walls of the tunnel, had not been done since 1991, reviewing the processes for that. Again, we have processes now in place that we can restart that process to be able to wash the tunnel walls themselves. Because what that does is that helps, reduce the amount of dust and grime that gets on to the insulator itself.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and I think you started out with the right response, and that is the apology to our customers, but this is about safety and communication, and it's very important that we come back and talk about some of the points that were raised here in terms of helping the board understand exactly the incident in its larger context of all the other things that we're doing. Thank you very much. Let's go on to the customer service agenda and ask Mr. Embry to get started with the item on the Tacoma Park, the Tacoma Langley Crossroad Transit Center.
Good morning, members of the board. I'm Jim Hamry. I'm the director of the Office of Planning, Scheduling, and Customer Facilities for Metrobus. And I'm very pleased to present this item about an important investment in the region's bus network, the Tacoma-Langley Crossroads Transit Center. The purpose of this presentation is to request authorization for a public hearing to add the transit center to the approved or the adopted regional system, and also to give the general manager approval and authorization to enter negotiations with MTA to formulate an agreement regarding the future operations and maintenance. Next slide. This is a facility that has many agencies participating, Montgomery County, Prince George's, MTA, SHA, and most importantly, the Crossroads community. And we're very pleased that it has reached this point. The purpose is to provide a safe and convenient principal transit transfer location and a focal point for transit access to the Crossroads community. It includes the operators that you see there. So you can see this is really multi-agency and regional in its implications, and also looking forward to the future transit investments in the region. It's part of a larger plan of improving the pedestrian environment and the safety in this Crossroads community, and making a lot of investments to improve the community and its economic activities within the community and the region. And we always try and keep in mind that this really is about protecting and improving the lives of the people that live there and use these services. Next. The transit center itself is located at the intersection of New Hampshire Avenue and University Boulevard. This is a mature community. It's located on a property that is a part of a shopping center, formerly a Taco Bell, and will be a important location for connections between the major arterials as well as the bus services that tie into the community surrounding. Next. There's a long history to this project led by the jurisdictions, the state, and the community. But WMATA became involved back in 2005 when, as part of the Metro Matters program, some money was set aside to invest in this center so that it could be completed. MTA was awarded a Tiger Grant to complete the design and construction as part of the region's Tiger program that is currently administered by the Council of Government. So this is an activity that has great connections throughout the region. The facility is currently under construction and should be completed this fall. There is a categorical exclusion for the environmental impact that was found and concurred so that there is no long-term NEPA impact. And as part of the public hearing process, WMATA will update the environmental assessment documentation. There are many offices and agencies that have contributed to this project here at Metro as well as throughout the region, and we appreciate all of their efforts leading to this point. So the recommendation is to authorize the public hearing to add the transit center to the adopted regional system and to approve and authorize Metro to enter into negotiations with MTA to execute this agreement regarding future operations where Metro will serve the role as the operating entity, making sure the trash is removed, the lights are taken care of, the place is cleaned and operated, and then any long-term capital implications or and ownership of the facility is retained by the state of Maryland. Next steps, the public hearing would be in the July timeframe, and arrangements are being made for a location and dates that will be, of course, announced when concluded. We're concluding the negotiation and final approvals of the agreement, and all of this information will be brought back to the board in September for final actions. And then hopefully we'll have a great celebration in the fall with everybody involved to celebrate the opening of the facility.
Madam Chair, I'd
happy to take any questions.
I'd like to move the resolution.
With the putting on the table first, Ms. Porter. Just moving.
I'd like to move the resolution.
And second, Ms. Hines. And questions? Did you have no questions? No discussion? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
And those opposed? Thank you very much for the approval.
Thank you.
The next item we have on the agenda is information. It's vital signs report. And Ms. Bernstein, I'm going to ask if you can highlight this in 5 minutes and reference to the board the report that we all have.
Okay. Thank you. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer. We can move right forward to the KPI summary slide. Okay. One more. I'm going to skip through some things. So in terms of looking at the overall results for the first quarter of the calendar year, which is January, February, March, we've had some challenges meeting our targets for a majority of the KPIs. So if you look at this screen up here, if a slider bar is red, that indicates that we're not meeting the target, and the target being the solid black line, which is to the right or the middle of the bar. Those shown in red this quarter are also doing worse than the same period last year. With the exception of escalator and elevator availability, we're down on all our other KPIs. And I must say, in the 5 years that I've been delivering the vital signs report to the committee, we've always had more of a balance of green than red, so this is a bit of a change and an exception. So let's look a little bit at the details on that. On-time performance. On the bus side, we met or exceeded our target during January and February. We experienced overall a slight decline compared to last year, and there's multiple factors. There's no one thing that's driving this. On the positive side, we've had more than 30 service changes implemented by the end of 2014, and that's improved our performance on average 6%. Our active street operations, which manages delays, bus bunching, and detours, has been effective, and we're using a data-driven approach for that. On the negative side, bad weather, multiple snow events, especially in February, resulted in bus detours and delays. There were approximately 50% more snow-related service advisory events compared to the same time last year, being 2014. And then construction projects, particularly the 16th Street Bridge, affected 10 Metro bus routes, and we saw an overall 30% increase in buses arriving late in those 10 routes. This didn't really show up in our bus customer satisfaction results for the quarter. It held steady at 78% despite the weather delays and detours. Rail on-time performance is down to its lowest level in recent memory and never reached target this quarter in any of the months. Between weather-related problems and the pressure placed on the rail fleet to service the Silver Line, there were often insufficient trains leading to less service delivery. We, again, on the rail side, experienced some multiple snow events in February, and that caused some rail car electrical equipment damage. The extreme temperature fluctuations caused 5 cracked rails in January and 2 in February. There was an incident in East Falls Church on the 20th of February when the temperature reached 5 degrees Fahrenheit, and I believe that's the lowest experience in the region in 120 years. The good news is that on-time performance improved again in March. So some of the ways we're addressing that is to keep supervisors at key locations to manage train spacing, maintaining the reliability of our rail infrastructure by using data from the track geometry vehicle as well as track walker observations to prioritize rail track for maintenance. And, of course, continuing the capital rebuilding program. Moving to the customer satisfaction on rail, it experienced a significant drop, unlike bus. So the reduced performance I just talked about is reflected in a customer satisfaction rating of 74%, and that's the lowest we've seen since we started the measure in 2013. Bus fleet reliability, we didn't meet our target. It was 5% lower than last year, and we have a range of issues that are impacting this that started about 2 years ago. We had to retire the 2000 Orion 6 buses due to safety concerns. At the same time, we were procuring new buses, and that was delayed by about 18 months because the chosen bus manufacturer was acquired by another. The new hybrid electric buses are showing unsatisfactory performance. The previous hybrids averaged about 13,000 miles between mean distance between failure. The new ones are averaging about 7,700 miles, which is almost half. We've also had some pneumatic issues in the cold weather, and then some end-of-life issues related to the 2003 articulated buses. So all those combined together impacted fleet reliability. We've begun numerous corrective actions, many of them collaborating with bus manufacturers. Rail fleet reliability, as I mentioned, we were challenged to meet the higher Silver Line requirement, car requirement, and February snow events led to cars going out of service with door and propulsion problems. And if you look at February, which was a cold month, the service requirement of 954 cars was met on only 4 of 19 weekdays. The original Silver Line plan called for 64,000 series cars, but because delivery was delayed, the line opened without the additional cars. The revised operating requirements of the Silver Line strained our maintenance program for rail cars, as increased usage of the older cars paired with less flexibility to keep the cars out of service for repair, for necessary repair or inspection, resulted in a backlog of cars needing repairs. The mileage for those older cars increased by 20% with the bigger system, and our spare ratio was reduced from 20 to 14%. Okay. Moving on to escalator and elevator, the bright spot. The availability surpassed target and performed better than the same quarter last year, and it's a good result, so I won't go into too much detail, but basically the improvements are a reflection of the elevator escalator's efforts to catch up on deferred maintenance and bring the assets into a state of good repair. When the units break down, when they do break down, the level of repairs required is much simpler and faster to fix, and we've talked to the committee about that numerous times before. Ms. Porter, you asked me in the pre-brief about what type of investment had been required to get this improved performance. So our capital improvement program for elevator escalator is ongoing and budgeted for over $430 million from FY11 to FY20. Those funds are going to rehab 90 elevators and 144 escalators and replace an additional 114 escalators. We've added 20 more mechanics. And we're using our resources smarter, dividing them into regions so that they can be deployed directly to work sites, which reduces response times. The next KPI is crime, and Chief Pavlik is going to be coming to provide an update, so I'm not going to talk about that too much, as well as you just heard the update on safety from Mr. Doherty. I did want to say one interesting fact about there are a number of questions about the slips, trips, and falls that we experience, not only for employees but also for customers. So not an official performance measure, but we believe that what's contributing to slips, trips, and falls is more ice, not necessarily snow, but actually ice. In 2014, we used 10,000 bags of salt in our system. Plant maintenance initiated 15 snow or ice plans with 6 calling for a full deployment. Moving to 2015, 15,000 bags of salt were used, and plant initiated 21 snow or ice plans, and almost double the amount calling for full staff deployment. So we definitely had a bigger reaction to the ice this year. And then finally, moving to the final slide, advancing performance. One more slide. Okay. I just wanted to note that we're continuing to improve our KPIs. We hear what stakeholders are saying. For example, we know that from a customer perspective, there are some shortcomings in the way we measure rail on-time performance. It doesn't necessarily jive with the customer's experience. Right now, it's a measure of how the trains are moving, and that's important to operations, and they manage to that. But the movement of customers from their origin to destination, that's a whole different story. So what are we doing? With the existing measure, we're filling in holes that have existed. In 2012, we added some stations back in that were excluded from the measure. We added in some low performance results that had been previously excluded. In other words, when we had the earthquake in 2011, we purposefully reduced our service and therefore didn't count it in the on-time performance measure. We put those things back in. We do believe there's more improvements that could be made to the existing measure, including a more consistent on window of what's considered on time. As you know, during the non-peak, we give ourselves a lot more flexibility for what's counted as on time. And then most exciting is the opportunity to introduce a new measure, again, focusing on customers. In 2014, we began to conduct research on rail customer travel time reliability using Faregate data. The measure addresses the key question asked by our customers, will my trip take X minutes dependably? So it's used extensively in other industries, in the highway industry, you can figure out how long is your journey supposed to take versus what it actually takes. But Metro would become the first U.S. transit agency to use this measure, and we're excited about that. If you think about the incident that we talked about from Monday and from Tuesday, particularly Monday, we actually took a look at using this new measure. What would that look like for one type of customer? So we know that most customers traveling from Vienna to Farragut West stations complete their travel in 40 minutes or less on average on a normal day. If we look at Monday's incident, we see that many fewer riders completed this trip as customers were offloaded and chose to take bus, walk, bike, or not take Metro at all. For those customers that did complete their trip, 80% had travel time exceeding 40 minutes, and some folks had travel times of up to 3 hours or more. I was one of them. I was on the high end with 3 hours. So this measure is going to really help us look at what the impact of these big incidents have on our customers. Okay. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions from anyone at this time? Mr. Bulger, and then I have a comment.
I just want to point out to our fellow colleagues that the handout is very easy. If you go to the second to last page, and I'm referring to, Madam Chair, the reliability of 4,000 series rail cars. There you see the rail fleet reliability, distance between delays, because we're talking about what to do about 4,000 series cars.
Yeah, that's the vibe we're doing.
That's 21, page 21.
That's another discussion.
They are being replaced. Part of the 7Ks are to replace 100 or 4,000.
Yeah.
That's all correct.
Right. Yep. Just want to make sure we're yep. So, and then the other question is the 5,000 is for midlife.
5,000 is to go through a midlife over. That's what it's programmed for.
How many 4,000 series cars do we have?
We have 100 4,000 series cars.
Oh, so we have that.
That's programmed.
Thank you. I wanted to call the attention to the new format that hopefully that can be more helpful to us. Just to note your explanation on the elevator and escalator piece is really an investment piece that we not only invested time in process, we invested more in resources. And as you look at that rail reliability, the focusing on the station specifically or isolating that, it seems to be the investment of it that we really need to think about in seeing how to get there. Mr. Goldman, and we can.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Burnside, I know the rail on-time performance data is a disappointment. I just wanted to drill down a little bit on some of those statistics. Mm-hmm. I think your charts and your slides and this document says that the service requirement of 954 cars was met on only 4 of 19 weekdays in February. What was the number that were actually offered at that point in time? If the goal was 954, do you have statistics as to what was, on average, the number of cars actually provided for the system?
I think it varies quite a lot by day, so we can get you that information. I don't have it here, though.
Well, do you have an average, or are we talking about a difference of 10 cars, 50 cars, 5%, 10%?
Again, I would be reluctant to be able to provide you an answer without really looking at what the data, because there is a wide disparity depending upon what it is. So we can certainly provide that information, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, these numbers you're reporting on were first quarter 2015.
January to March.
You're doing calendar quarter.
Yeah, we always do the performance measures on calendar.
All right. And so the 954 includes the requirements for the Silver Line as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's when it really ramped up, 954.
Have you done any looking as whether the on-time performance has improved in the second quarter? In what we're looking at, you're reporting on January, February, March.
Yep.
And this is pretty awful. Have we looked at, just taking a pot shot, looking at April just to see if things are getting better, or is this a pattern that seems to be continuing into the second quarter?
I believe the pattern's getting better, but again, I didn't bring the specific numbers. That would be available in my next report, but we can get you that information ahead of time. Sure.
Provide that,
yeah,
by the end of the week.
I would assume that the weather's warmed up, so some of the weather-related challenges we wouldn't be experiencing.
Right. Besides the weather-related challenges, your slides seem to indicate a bigger part of the problem is maintenance. For certain of the rail cars, like 4,000.
Not having enough time to maintain them because they're in service, because we don't have the Silver Line cars, yes.
Right. And do we know if that's getting any better?
Well, since the 7,000 cars are still arriving, it's going to take a while, yeah.
Is the reason for the poor performance all maintenance, or is part of it that operators don't show up?
No, it's all
tied to equipment. Yeah. And I just want to clarify something, too, on the weather-related events, so you kind of put it in context so you understand. It's not simply the day of the weather-related event that we have problems, and particularly the type of snow that we had, because it was very, very cold. Instead of getting the wet snow, you get the very, very fine snow. That fine snow intrudes into the propulsion system, so that car has to be taken out, and it can be out sometimes for 3 or 4 days, you know, to be able to do that. So we run the cars in those conditions. Moving forward with the 7000 series car, it's a much better propulsion package. They actually put the motor underwater and ran the motor underwater for, you know, a long period of time. So it kind of gives you an idea of the difference between the new technology that we will be introducing and the older technology. So the weather-related events are not simply tied to that day, but they extend a number of days because having to fix the car after the water or the snow is intruded into the propulsion package through there.
Right, but that should be winter-related, so as we move into spring,
correct,
and summer.
Yes, yes.
That should be a cause of maintenance.
Yes, that's correct. And we are seeing, you know, and I am seeing much, much better availability numbers, making target more often than we did in the previous quarter. I am seeing that, what that would be. I wouldn't venture to guess.
Final question. When we miss the target, what's the repercussion of that for service? Does that mean you're canceling trains, or you're running 6-car trains as opposed to 8-car trains, or do both happen?
Very, very seldom do we cancel trains. I mean, you know, but mostly what it is, we may miss a slot or two, but then we manage with 6-car trains, try to put together a 6-car train.
So the perception of riders that there's more congestion is probably accurate, because instead of seeing the 8-car train, they're only getting 6 cars.
That's correct, yes.
Leaving the station.
Or if we miss a trip, that would widen the headways between the trains arriving at the station. They would experience that.
And again, you know, this is also, you know, where trains don't make the end-to-end trip, where we offload. You know, sometimes we'll have, you know, with the 5000 series car, for example, and the 4000 series cars, you know, we end up with an en route problem where we have to offload, and then those passengers have to be picked up by another train. So that's cars taken out of service. And so that's some of the congestion issues that the people will see as well.
Okay. So I appreciate your data on what we actually experienced first quarter, how many cars were actually not operated on a more granular level, and
okay,
to the extent that you have information on April. I appreciate that.
Sure.
As soon as possible.
We'll do.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, forgive me if you've already covered this, but what's the optimal spare ratio for the 7000 series vehicles?
The spare ratio that the industry uses is between 18% and 22% per spare ratio for vehicles. Based on where we're looking at being able to provide service, You know, I think that with the maintenance programs that we have in place, with the 7,000 series, I'm actually comfortable going to about a 12%, 10 to 12% a spare ratio with those because of the newer car. So I would be comfortable utilizing that spare ratio as we go through our programs on that. But generally speaking, you know, based on and that varies like with the age of the fleet. So depending on your fleet management plan, where the age of your fleet is, when you're going to get the midlife overhauls in, that can vary. But industry standards, like I said, anywhere between 18 and 22%.
Okay, because the report, the detail in here seemed to suggest that the change from 20% to 14% was contributing to maintenance-related issues on the Silver Line or the 7,000 series vehicles serving the Silver Line. Is that true?
That is not correct. We only have one train set of the 7K in. There's only one train set of the 7K in. So the 7K is not specifically for the Silver Line. It's the Silver Line service. The ability to utilize the existing fleet for the Silver Line.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Sorry if that was confusing. It's related to the older fleets.
The older
yes.
fleet. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was just, it wasn't clear. And then just to switch gears a little bit, is someone focused on stormwater and trying to prevent water infiltration of escalators and elevators? I know you've got a canopy program, but there's no drainage designed into the canopies, and it just seems to me we've got a lot of hardscape. Is there somebody in the engineering group that's actually focused on, you know, trying to introduce, you know, kind of low intensity development techniques or to deal with stormwater, given how problematic that is with these escalators and elevators?
Yeah, we did about 2 years ago. We looked at the ability to be able to go through and do drainage on those. And again, it simply gets so we've done that study. We've looked at those. We've developed those programs. It simply is a matter of the funding issue for that at this point.
That's good. But beyond the canopies, I mean, just the whole issue of the impact of water infiltration on those systems. I mean, we're spending a lot of money rehabilitating all of those systems, but are we going to just be in the same situation several years down the road because we haven't actually addressed the root causes?
We have looked at it. We've looked at it very closely. There's some methods, like you said, the low impact ones, the low cost ones that we can put in. And there are some higher cost ones, which we have made assessments on, and we're trying to move them into the capital program appropriately. So, and the canopies obviously will be a huge driver of being able to stop the water infiltration on these units.
Is there someone who's actually responsible for that issue?
There is nobody specifically responsible for that issue, but there is an engineering team that is looking at that. Our structures people, in association with our elevator and escalator people, have looked at that issue. Does that answer the question? Or?
Let me go to
Mr. Danley.
I didn't
have a question. I was just going to wrap up and set aside for
finance.
Okay, thank
you. I will let us do that part then. And hearing no other questions, I think we can adjourn the customer service and operations. And we go into...
We're going into board executive session. I think it probably will take an hour. So I'm suggesting that finance not begin before 1:45, but it might more likely be 2. And also, I want to thank Ms. Bernstein for the report. Not that it's a good report. We have to underscore her comment. This is the worst report we have received in the last several years. It really tells us we have to be doing our job better.